Green Nashville Studios, presented by Wholesale Inc. Mount Juliet. Start your engines. This is the Chasing Checkers Podcast with Chase McCabe on Nashville's best sports talk,
ESPN
102.5 The Game.
Let's light them up. Welcome in, Chasing Checkers, ESPN 102.5, The Game, online at thegamenashville.com. How you doing? Chase McCabe, hanging out. It's what we do, talk a little NASCAR every week. Also on iTunes, on the air, rate, subscribe, review, SoundCloud, Google Play, everywhere. Lot to get into this week. Adam Alexander from Fox NASCAR is going to join us. He will be, he is a part of their broadcasting team. You see him on Race Hub all the time, just about every day. But I always enjoy having him on. I don't think we've had him on this show. I've had him on in the past, but he hasn't been on this show yet. So it'll be cool to have Adam on. Fox always great about giving their people some time with us. But one race in the playoffs is now in the books, and once again, we are talking about the same guy that we have talked about for the last 3 weeks, and that is Brad Keselowski. He won, again, three in a row. Didn't have the best car, didn't dominate, again, still has won three in a row. It has been amazing, and I will say it now, and this will be a subject matter on this show. There is officially a big four. When a guy wins three in a row and has now advanced to the next round in the playoffs, I'll go through the standings in just a second. I mean, look, there is a big four. He is very much in this championship race, and with the performance that Harvick had and Kyle Busch had his struggles, Truex had a good run. You know, I mean, look, he's in this thing. The cushion that the big three had isn't as big anymore. Now, they had those playoff points, those bonus points that they can take with them. I mean, that's something that's going to help them out. That's why you win those races in the regular season. But it's not as good as it was. I mean, they've fallen off a little bit. But Brad Keselowski gets that win and, of course, was very excited when he was in victory lane talking on NBC.
Hot temperatures and multiple restarts there at the end, Brad. How did you hold that field off?
Oh, man. I think, first off, Dave, I got to say, congratulations to all those fans that made it through the whole race in the stands at 100 degrees. That was really cool. Thank you to the fans. And Penske, 500 wins today. Huge day for the captain. I know Mr. Penske's watching. You did it, boss. But to start off the playoffs with a win is, that's really strong. And let alone the three in a row and all that great stuff. But it's really a testament to this team here. They've been so strong on pit road, and I couldn't have done it without them. We weren't as fast as a 78 car, but we nailed the pit stops and the restarts when it counted, and that put us in position. So really, really proud of the effort from the team here today. Fun race, hot one, but those restarts, that was the key.
I think his pit crew, and that's Brad Keselowski with Dave Burns of NBC, I think his pit crew has won these three races for him. I mean, look, he admitted it right there, and you'll hear him say several times, he didn't have the best car. I mean, Truex had the best car. Truex needed a good run. Truex had the best car and didn't win the race. That's been the theme. And look, Brad Keselowski has found a way to put himself in a position, whether it's the work of his pit crew, strategy on the track, whatever the case may be. Brad Keselowski has put himself in a position to win these races the last 3 weeks, and he has now become a contender for this championship. But the fact of the matter is, he's still not the best car. He's still not the best guy, out there. If I can say that three times fast. But he's made it work. And part of his strategy, as you'll hear here, is he's kind of taken it 1 week at a time.
Like I said earlier, Bob, I've tried to think of the playoffs as 1 week at a time. And I've tried not to get too far ahead. I think I've made that mistake in the past. Whether it comes to the Roval or Phoenix or Homestead, you got to get there first. And the pathway through there is, 1 week at a time.
And that's the strategy you have to have. And so far, that 1 week at a time mentality has worked out for them, because he has, again, not had the best car, but he's gone in there. He's put himself in a position late. They have strategized, and he's ended up in victory lane. The 500th victory for Roger Penske, which is just tremendous. I mean, just across his, you know, his motorsports background that he has with IndyCar and all the way back to kart and, you know, now NASCAR, of course. I mean, 500 victories for Roger Penske as an owner, the captain. That's why they call him that. Pretty amazing. But BK has this one-week-at-a-time mentality. They win the last three races, and look, he even admitted, I said he would, he even admitted they weren't the best.
You know, we have not been the best car the last 3 weeks. This week, we were probably a top three or four car. I didn't get to see the four car before he had his issue, but I thought he was running pretty good. He was obviously in front of me at one point. And him and the 78 were very strong. The 78 was clearly the best car. And we put everything together when it counted and kind of stole it today. Same scenario the last 2 weeks. I thought the 42 was the best car in Darlington. And we hit the strategy right and executed the last pit stop, and that put us in position to win. And in Indy, we were nowhere near probably even a top 10 car. We were probably a 15th place car. And Paul Wolf hit the strategy right, and then I hit the restart right to make all the passes when it counted and won that race. So with that in mind, no, I feel like we stole the last three races. We're not complaining, but we still have a lot of work to do to go out there and win heads up without those issues.
So that's my question. They've stolen the last three races, according to Brad Keselowski, which, look, I can argue with that. I think everybody agrees with that. What does that mean moving forward? Does that mean that, hey, they're in position, they're going to go to Homestead, it doesn't really matter, a win is a win. It doesn't matter how you got there, a win is a win. Or will the fact that maybe they're not running as well as the other drivers, maybe that if Truex is still a better car, Larson, Harvick, Kyle Busch, doesn't matter, will that catch up with him, and will the good luck run out? Because I'm kind of thinking that they got into the playoffs. They're already going to get in on points. Getting a couple wins to end the regular season obviously gave them momentum and helped. But there have been several other cars that have run better than them throughout the year. They've been okay. They've been top 10, but they haven't been the best cars out there. I mean, they truly have found some good luck on these last few races. And Brad was once again in post race asked, does he feel like he's truly made himself a part of a big four?
No, I don't. I feel like we're proud of this win, but it's one win and a long grind. And there's 9 weeks of long grinding left. 2014, we won the first race, I think, in Chicago. And that was terrific. I wouldn't trade that for anything. But we were eliminated out of the playoffs 4 or 5 weeks later. It's a grind, and you look too far ahead, you get in trouble.
So he's learned from the past, and we've heard him say that several times, that he has learned from past mistakes in order to try and put things together and win another championship. And I think he's showing that experience. I think he's realizing that. But I ultimately think he is part of a big four. Because what have I said about Kyle Larson? I've said this multiple times about Kyle Larson. He hadn't won. He finished second again. He's had good cars. He's had speed. He's been in contention, but he hasn't closed the deal. That has been his Achilles heel and what might keep him out of Homestead. Because if Brad Keselowski keeps finding a way to win, we know the big three are going to win some of these races. We do. It's going to happen. One of them or all of them or two of them, it doesn't matter. They're going to win some of these playoff races before they get to Homestead. If Larson can't get a win, what's to make me think he's going to get into the Final Four at Homestead? And quite frankly, if he doesn't win, I don't want him in the Final Four at Homestead. I think those four drivers should have a win. I mean, that's a part of a championship, is getting wins. So not knocking on Larson. I think he's a very talented driver. But he hasn't found a way to find victory lane this year, and it just ultimately has cost him. Truex, who finished third, had a good run. He was asked if there's a big four.
you know, I think the big three talk is cool for the regular season, but when it comes to the playoffs, it's you know, the big four are going to make the final four, so that's the only thing that matters at that point. And you know, we can talk all we want about who did great in the regular season, but at the end of the day, we're here to win a championship, and you know, at the end of the season, the four best guys will be at Homestead, and hopefully we're there.
That's my point. The four best guys will be at Homestead. Who are the four best guys? We don't know if it's Martin Truex Jr., Kevin Harvick, Kyle Busch, and X. It could be all three as a part of it. It could be one. It could be none. That's what NASCAR has done with this format, with this playoff format. We don't know. And right now, Brad Keselowski has found good luck, or something else, according to Martin Truex Jr.
Brad clearly found the horseshoe. Three races in a row, he's won. He has not had the best car. If you want to really talk about the sport being what it is, you got to look at that. I mean, obviously, he hasn't led the most laps in either any of those races, and he showed up at the end with good pit stops and good short run speed. So, I think clearly it's pretty obvious, you know, how it worked out. He's hot right now. He's on a streak. That's the way it goes. You know, we finished third with the best car. So, the last 3 weeks we had a top three car, and we finished 14th or worse in every one of them. You know what I'm saying? So, it's a tough sport. A lot of things can happen, and momentum is momentum and luck being on your side. There's a lot to say for it. Obviously, they're executing. They're doing all the little things right, and that's what it takes to you know, to win these things.
That's why, under this format, as you just heard Martin Truex Jr. say, it's not a guarantee that the best guys are going to make it to Homestead. It's not. It could be anybody in this top 16 right now. Now, they got 2 weeks to get it down to 12. There are some guys that need to do some work that are on the cutoff line. Let's look at the let's actually check out the points real quick. Adam Alexander coming up here in just a few minutes. But this is what we have right now, points-wise. Obviously, now going into what would be the round of 12, Brad Keselowski leads the way. He has a win, so he has advanced. It doesn't matter what he does the last two races of this round. He has advanced. Truex Jr. comes in second right now, 65 to the good. Kyle Busch is third, 63 to the good. Kevin Harvick, fourth, 38 to the good. Has a lot of bonus points to play with. I think he's going to be fine. Joey Logano, 34 to the good, in fifth. Sixth, Kurt Busch, a guy that had issues, 24 to the good. Ryan Blaney, seventh, 20 to the good. Kyle Larson in eighth, he's 19 up. Ninth is Eric Almirola, 12 up. And then in 10th, Austin Dillon, 9-point cushion. 11th, Clint Bowyer, 7 points. And 12th, Alex Bowman, 6 points to the good. In the cutoff, those on the outside looking in right now into the round of 12, Jimmy Johnson in 13th, Chase Elliott in 14th, Eric Jones in 15th, Denny Hamlin in 16th. I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think Jimmy Johnson's going to make it. I don't think he's going to get out of the first round. And I know I've said all year, I've been consistent on saying, don't sleep on Jimmy Johnson. He'll figure it out eventually. Well, eventually he's running out. I don't know. Got to see something. I mean, he was always good at Charlotte, but they're running the Roval. Nobody knows what's going to happen at the Roval. Richmond, good. Decent there. Obviously, Kyle Busch is too. Kevin Harvick is as well. So, there's some guys that need to do some work this weekend, this Saturday night, at Richmond. We will find out what happens. But Adam Alexander is going to join us from Fox NASCAR. Talk playoffs, silly season, a lot of stuff to get into here for just a little bit. It's Chasing Checkers. Find us online at thegamenashville.com. You can also go to iTunes, rate, subscribe, and review, and SoundCloud as well. Adam Alexander next, Chasing Checkers, ESPN 102.5 The Game. And welcome Welcome back into Chasing Checkers here on 102.5 The Game. Chase McCabe here with you as always, and pleased to be joined by Adam Alexander from Fox NASCAR. You can see him on Race Hub. Of course, he's a play-by-play on their Xfinity coverage as well. Adam, how are you?
Doing great, Chase. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Excited that the playoffs are in full swing, and I will just start right there. I think we might officially have a big four. We've been talking about the big three all year long, but Brad Keselowski all of a sudden was like, hey, we're going to turn this thing on, and wins three in a row.
It's hard to not, you know, lump Brad into that category with Truex and Kyle Busch and Kevin Harvick, who were so good throughout the regular season. And I think what I like about that two team, I'm not sure that they have the speed, Chase, that the 18, 78, and 4 have produced. But they have been executing so well. And I think when you go back to Darlington and their ability to win the race off pit road that put them in position to get out front and win that race, you look at how good Brad was on restarts at Indianapolis. And then once again in the postseason opener at Las Vegas, he delivered a great restart on multiple occasions. The team was outstanding on pit road. It's those little things that will add up to a championship and help bridge the gap when maybe there's a deficit on speed. So I think they put themselves in the conversation for sure.
Yeah, and what was interesting, I've been talking all year long about this, that do we need a fourth driver, or are we going to be satisfied if one of these three, and really for a while, the first half of the season, it was Harvick and Kyle Busch, but would we be okay with one of these three just walking away with the championship? I think with the format that NASCAR has come up with for the playoffs, it does provide us the opportunity to have an upset. And so people were trying to figure out who that upset would be. It might not even be Brad Keselowski, but do you think it would be good for the playoffs, for viewership? Obviously, we look at that if it is somebody outside of Harvick, Truex, or Busch, or even Keselowski that wins this championship.
Well, I do think that one of the conversations that we have had so many times throughout the year and really dominated the headlines prior to heading to Daytona and opening up 2018, and that is the emergence of the young drivers and where do they fit into this puzzle, and is this the year that they start to take steps toward being a part of the championship equation? And I'm not sure that what they've done in the regular season is an indicator that they're going to do that. But I do think that there have been some things that have happened in recent weeks and really dating back to the middle portion of the summer that would indicate a couple of young guys are ready to take a step. I think Chase Elliott, although he was wrecked out Sunday at Las Vegas, that team showed speed, and I think he's got a real opportunity if they can bounce back at Richmond to advance. And I really think they could make it to Miami. I look at Eric Jones as another one. You know, wrong place, wrong time at Las Vegas. But if they can dig out of the hole that was created by that accident in the first race in the playoffs, I think they, too, have a chance to make a splash and you know, be that upset driver that can make it down to Homestead and have a chance to compete for the title. And you know, I don't know that you would consider Larson an upset or a surprise. But there is no doubt if he could find his way to South Florida, given how good he is at that racing facility, he would be someone that could walk away with the big crown.
Adam Alexander from Fox NASCAR here with us on Chasing Checkers. Chase McCabe here with you as well. And so speaking of the playoffs and continuing that conversation at Richmond this weekend, and this is a little different. I mean, we've started the playoffs in two different locations because NASCAR looked at this schedule and they revamped it. The next week they'll be at Charlotte for the Roval race, the debut of that. What do you make of the job that NASCAR has done revamping the playoff schedule?
Well, for me, it's great. And I think for guys like you and I, Chase, it gives us so much to talk about, not just the fact that we've got change, but the variation in tracks. You take away a mile and a half, you add a short track under the lights, you put a road course in the playoffs. I mean, I think for us, it's awesome. You start taking a survey of the garage, and there's a lot of head scratching, especially when you consider how crazy things got at Las Vegas on Sunday. Now you're going to a short track race with a lot of drivers with very little margin for error, some that already are in Hail Mary mode, feeling like they've got to make a big statement Saturday night to get themselves back in a good position going to the one that ends this round, the Roval. And I think that it's going to be really crazy in 2 weeks' time next weekend when we get to Charlotte Motor Speedway, just because of the uncertainty of that track. And I think everyone knows, you know, the smallest mistake at Charlotte is going to end your day. There's just no margin for error at that facility. And so when you put that all together, this opening round is changed the way we look at the playoffs. It's changed the way the teams approach it and compete on a weekly basis. And I think the urgency was up on Sunday because teams knew this is our opportunity to win and take that Roval out of the equation, so to speak. I think we'll see more of that on Saturday night at Richmond. And when we get to Charlotte next weekend, and there are, you know, going to be at least 14 drivers that are not locked into that next round, it will be intense, no doubt about it.
Yeah, and I think the thing with the Roval is just going to be interesting just because there's so many unknowns. I know they've done tests there, but you have kind of a mixed reaction out of the drivers because they don't know what to expect. Now, the ones that aren't in the playoffs, I mean, they can go out there and try and win a race and play spoiler, but the ones that are, as you just mentioned, I mean, they're going to have to be careful and not make a mistake, and they don't necessarily know where those mistakes can be made.
Well, it's a wild card, I think, really, from multiple angles. Number one is, as you said, we haven't been there. I mean, the testing is fine, but that doesn't tell you what you're going to face when you put 40 cars on track. So just the unknowns of a brand-new racetrack makes it a wild card. Then you go to, okay, it's a road course, and that means strategy can come into play and throw off the balance of the race completely and bring some guys into the equation that maybe normally would not be a factor. And then lastly, and I kind of mentioned this a moment ago, I think if you just look at the layout of the Roval and you compare it to a Sonoma or a Watkins Glen, Watkins Glen, Sonoma, you get off track, you've got some runoffs where you can take care of your equipment. While you're going to lose a ton of track position, you're not going to be out of the race. If you go off track at the Roval, you're probably going to be into a wall, and you're going to damage your car beyond repair, and you're going to be done. And I think when you add all of those factors together, this to me is good elimination race as we've seen. I know for years we went to Dover, and that's a tough racetrack, and we had Talladega that ended round two, and the drivers and teams didn't like that because of what a wild card it is. I think this trumps both of those big time just because there are so many factors that we don't know about. And at the end of the day, four drivers are going to be eliminated.
He's Adam Alexander from Fox NASCAR. You can see him on NASCAR Race Hub and also their Xfinity schedule when Fox has the NASCAR races outside of the Truck Series. So we've had a very active silly season. And Adam, I think it might be more active than I can remember in years past. I know there's always some big moves, but you know, with Kurt Busch, we don't know where he's going as of yet. There are rumors out there that it's Chip Ganassi. That opens a ride, and there's all these dominoes that are starting to fall. Is this one of the more active silly seasons that you can remember?
It has been very active, and I think what has made this silly season more interesting is just the resumes of the drivers that are uncertain or yet to announce where they will drive next season. I mean, you talked about Kurt Busch, and many, you know, believe he'll end up in that one car at Chip Ganassi Racing, and we know that Jamie McMurray will not be back there. You know, Ryan Newman made the announcement prior to the race at Las Vegas that he would not be back in the 31, and so question marks come about of where is Ryan going. And here's a guy that, you know, has been a perennial playoff driver, didn't make it this year, but someone who certainly has still got gas left in the tank and is capable of competing and winning races. When you start putting, you know, champions names on the unemployment list and put question marks behind drivers who have won Daytona 500s and Brickyard 400s and put together the career that these guys have, really, you know, cornerstones of the names that we talk about on a weekly basis for the last 10, 15 years in the sport, I think that really puts into perspective how crazy things are right now. And still, I think a lot more questions than there are answers about who's going to fill these rides and where some of these drivers are going to end up. And it's created a lot of curiosity among those in and around the sport, no doubt.
Well, and I think some of the biggest questions are with the sponsorship dollars, you know, and how much they control the sport, how expensive things have gotten. I mean, Barney Visser's closing his team. They're the defending Cup Series champion, and they're not going to race next year. Now, Truex and Cole Pearn, you know, they're probably going over to Gibbs, and they'll continue on. But it's just amazing that we've gotten to this point in the sport where it's all about those sponsorship dollars. And if a driver has it or a team has it, that they're fine. But if one goes away, it just can end a program just like that.
Well, and taking nothing away from some of the young drivers we see racing in Cup right now, but I think part of the reason young guys are being given an opportunity is because they don't come with the price tag for an owner that some of the veterans, you know, come with. And I think the perfect example of that is, you know, Matt Kenseth. I mean, he mm-hmm. you know, is running part-time, obviously, at Roush Fenway, but had a good full-time ride at Gibbs, and that didn't continue. And a lot of that was, you know, you couldn't afford to pay a championship driver. You get a younger driver that's better for your bottom line. And so some of these guys are getting opportunities. And I think when, you know, you look at Hendrick Motorsports. I mean, William Byron, still very young. Alex Bowman getting an opportunity. These are guys that help you out financially. And I'm taking nothing away from these are accomplished race car drivers that it was inevitable they were going to get an opportunity at NASCAR's highest level. But I think it probably came sooner rather than later because the owners recognized this is an opportunity for us to open up our future business plan. And I think that can be a factor in where some of these drivers land. There's no doubt that the front runner for that one car right now is Kurt Busch. But when you look at what Ross Chastain has done in that Xfinity car, if the Kurt thing doesn't work out, is he a viable option? Probably more so than he would have been in the past, just because, you know, you can put him in that ride, and he's someone that's going to help your budget. I don't know that's going to happen, but I would say those conversations are more fluid now, just given the state of the sport.
Well, and you just kind of answered my next question, but just talking about those Xfinity drivers that you see on a weekly basis when you're calling the races for the Xfinity Series on Fox, just drivers that people need to watch out for. We all know about Christopher Bell and what's surrounding him and how good he is, but you mentioned Ross Chastain. Who are some other drivers that you could see maybe not next year making the jump, but possibly a year after as this new generation continues to come to Cup?
Well, I do think at the top of the list, you know, when you talk about future superstars and guys that are a lock to move to Cup, you know, Christopher Bell leads the way. I would say that Cole Custer certainly has a destination in Cup someday, probably at Stuart Haas, given the relationship there. I think, you know, Justin Allgaier is an interesting case because, you know, he raced for years in the Xfinity Series, won, competed for championships, went to Cup with a lower-funded team, didn't have the success he would have liked, came back to the Xfinity Series with a great team at Junior Motorsports and has had great success, gotten better year after year. And who knows, this could be the season that he goes out and wins the championship. I think he's someone that could move up to the next level. I would say those are the front runners. You know, Daniel Hemric, although he hasn't won in truck and Xfinity competition, he's someone's name that has surfaced quite a bit. When you look at rumors on who's going where for 2019 in the Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series, and I would really almost be surprised if he wasn't running a Cup car next season. I think he's, you know, kind of ready to make that jump. He's got some sponsorship help. Matt Tift is another guy that probably is being talked about a little bit because of the backing that he has. So those are some of the people that I would probably put on my list and names that I would mention as future drivers at NASCAR's top level.
He's Adam Alexander from Fox NASCAR, and just kind of continuing that conversation a little bit, we've seen this influx of young drivers over the last 2-3 years because, you know, some of this generation, you know, Dale Jr. retired, and you have Jimmy Johnson that's getting on up there, Jeff Gordon retired, Tony Stewart. I mean, they're all starting families and going on to that next phase in life, and I think that in some cases you had some of these young drivers that got put into a Cup ride maybe a little bit before they were ready. And so you've had fans that have kind of struggled to find their next driver. Do you feel like that the young generation, Chase Elliott, Kyle Larson, those guys, do you think they're starting to come into their own and therefore they're bringing more fans into NASCAR?
Well, I do, and I think Chase winning at Watkins Glen was big, you know, obviously for him and his career, because everyone was starting to ask the question, kind of like we did with Larson, when's this, you know, kid going to win a race? And he'd been so close so many times. So I think that was big, not only for Chase and in his career, but I think it was also really big for the sport. You know, here's NASCAR's most popular driver, and I really believe that Chase will take over that title at the end of this season when the voting is complete. You need him to be a player. You need him to win on a regular basis and compete for championships. And I think given, you know, the deficit in speed that we've seen out of the Chevy camp, and more in particular Hendrick Motorsports, Chase is getting all he can out of that car. I don't know if I'd go as far as to say he's overachieved this year, but I think he's competed at a pretty high level with equipment maybe that it's not on par with some of the fastest cars that we see and talk about on a week-in, week-out basis. I think he is the guy that can really make a difference. You know, huge disappointment for him at Las Vegas because he had a fast car and was doing what he needed to do. If they are able to advance, I think Chase is someone that could go out and win the championship and have an opportunity to bring even more fans in. I think Kyle Larson's got a solid backing. Eric Jones is starting to, you know, to kind of hit the ground running in that regard. I think Daniel Suarez is someone who has that capability, hasn't performed like he needs to probably draw the interest from new fans. But there's no doubt he has a great fan base. If he could win, that would grow. So those are some of the drivers that I think have a chance to really make a difference in the future of the sport, if they can win races and compete for championships, which I think is vital if you're going to be able to bring the fans in.
Adam, as we wrap this up, something that I've talked about a lot on this show is, you know, obviously here in Nashville, we don't have NASCAR. We have the local racing and the weekly series and things like that at the fairgrounds. But we recently have voted to build a soccer stadium next to the racetrack. They want to keep the racetrack. They've talked to Marcus Smith and those at SMI. And so I ask the question of, is there a track not currently on the Cup Series schedule that you could see possibly joining in the next 5 years? And do you have a wish list?
Well, I would say, you know, I think Nashville would be a great place to go. I think about that city and where it is geographically and just kind of the history and heritage and how so many of the things you think of when you think about Nashville as a city, how that connects to NASCAR and that demographic. It's surprising to me that we don't go there, really. So I think that would be something that would make a lot of sense, and I think would be great for the sport. And I know there's been talk about the banquet, you know, coming to Nashville, Tennessee at the end of the season. I think that would be a wonderful move, too, for so many reasons. I think that, you know, Iowa Speedway is a proven racetrack when you look at the racing there for both the Truck and Xfinity Series, and it's a venue that I think would be great for Cup. Logistically, there would be some hurdles, I think, because of that market size and where the track is located and, you know, just overall infrastructure. But I think the racing surface and the way the fans embrace racing in that part of the country, that would be a good one. And selfishly speaking, I'm from Indianapolis, you know, and for years we've gone to the Brickyard and, you know, the trucks don't go to Indy at all now. And Xfinity's moved from the short track over in Claremont over to the big facility in Speedway. I wish, you know, we could go run the short track on a Wednesday night with Cup cars in Indy and then go to the big track on Saturday or Sunday.
I am right there with you.
To me, those are the kinds of things we have to think about from a scheduling standpoint. And, you know, whether or not that happens, I don't know. It's my understanding they're making some upgrades at you know, the old Indianapolis Raceway Park. And is that, you know, those upgrades something that could attract NASCAR again? I don't know, but I'd love to see that.
Yeah, and that was such a fun track to watch the Xfinity cars and trucks on. I'm right there with you. And you just kind of alluded to it. Do you see midweek races happening at some point in the near future?
I don't think near future. I think we're a few years away from that just because of NASCAR's in a little bit of a corner right now and the agreement they have with the tracks to make any major changes. But I personally think we would be foolish to not investigate it. I think there's going to be a lot of track owners that balk at that because they want weekend revenue and they want the big crowd. And I think they realize it's going to be difficult if you do a one-day show on a Wednesday to draw the kind of people and create the kind of revenue you can if you got a, you know, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, or at the very least Saturday, Sunday weekend event. But I do think Wednesday night racing will happen eventually, and I would say I'm a huge fan of that. And I think the other thing Wednesday night racing can create is you can shorten the season as far as the calendar year, but you don't have to shorten it as far as number of races and number of tracks that we go to. I think the season is too long, and I think we compete with football for far too long. And if you could get into a February to September or a March to September window and have the same number of races, but some of those are in the middle of the week, I really think you'd be onto something.
I think you're a very smart individual, Adam Alexander, because I have been saying that for a long time as a fan of the sport. And so I think that you're onto something, and hopefully your bosses will help influence that with NASCAR.
Absolutely. Yeah, that'd be a lot of fun for sure.
Absolutely. Hey, Adam, I appreciate the time as always. We enjoy the racing from Richmond, and we will talk to you down the road.
Great to be with you, Chase. Thanks for having me on.
That is Adam Alexander from Fox NASCAR. Again, catch him on NASCAR Race Hub daily. And he also, of course, anchors their Xfinity coverage when they have it. And look, he is on to something. We've talked about it on this show. I think the midweek races, I think the season is too long. Competing against the NFL, it's not a good business plan for NASCAR. So I think that Adam Alexander is definitely on to something. And, you know, I think it's going to come up a lot here in the next few years. It's Chasing Checkers, ESPN 102.5, The Game online at thegamenashville.com. We'll come back. We will discuss race number two in the playoffs at Richmond. That is all next. ESPN 102.5, The Game. We're back on Chasing Checkers, ESPN 102.5, The Game. Chase McCabe here with you. I said we'd talk about the race this weekend at Richmond, but what I didn't say is we were going to do it with driver Clint Bowyer. He is here in Nashville at Martin's Barbecue. And Clint, you're here for a Talladega event. Let's talk about that first. And I know that there has to be a little bit of a relief that this isn't a cutoff race anymore, but you guys have a lot of fun at the Super Speedway.
You know, let's hit on that right now. You know, Talladega isn't a cutoff race, but we certainly have probably even more of a dangerous track is this Roval, being our cutoff for the first, you know, cutoff in the playoffs. That being said, Talladega is always, you know, a dangerous racetrack. And I don't mean that, you know, safety-wise. I think within a three-race format and a cutoff, if it's one of those three, it's a dangerous track. You can lose a lot of ground here if you're not careful. But you have to look at these tracks like Talladega as an opportunity. You cannot be looking over your shoulder, you know, worried about them points, worried about the stages, worried about your finish. Oh my gosh, points, points, points. I cannot bury myself at Talladega. If you do, that's exactly what you're going to do. 9 times out of 10, if you're looking at that cone, you're going to hit it. You know what I mean? And you got to keep your eye on the ball. And certainly that ball is getting, you know, our 14 Ford up front and in position to win our third, you know, race at Talladega.
As a guy that won two races this year, you're very much in the playoffs. How sick of hearing about a big three are you? Like, how much do you want to play spoiler?
Well, I don't want to be spoiler. I just want to be one of them. You know what I mean? I mean, as a competitor, if somebody tells you that they're sick of hearing it, that's because they're jealous of it. They want to be, you know, them. And certainly I use that as fuel for the fire. We've won a couple races. You know, I think we're capable of entering that conversation, but we've had too many mistakes. We've had too many bumps on the road. We've definitely got to smooth all that out, find our consistency as they have week in and week out. And if we can do that and put together these 9 races, we can be a champion instead of them.
Clint, you're a guy that has a lot of personality, that you, whether it's in the media center or doing interviews. How important is that to a sport that continues to try and grow itself and build its audience?
I think, you know, in our sport, I think the personalities, the characters of the drivers have always carried our sport. You know, they can change rules, they can change cars, and whatever they wanted to change, the characters, the drivers, the racers were always the ones that carried the sport. They're always the ones that the fans flock to, and it was always a blue-collar, you know, atmosphere. Always a blue-collar fan base, always a blue-collar racer behind the wheel of those race cars. I'm a fan. I mean, Dale Earnhardt was the ultimate blue-collar guy. He was the badass that everybody wanted to be on the racetrack, but off the racetrack, he had chicken farms. He had this, he had that, you know. I mean, he did normal, everyday, working class, you know, hobbies. Right. He didn't have a desk job where he was trying to, you know, on the stock exchange and stuff like that, or doing anything, you know, any different than a guy working a 9-to-5 job would do all across the country. I mean, that's, for me, that's the kind of guy I want to see out there winning. And if I'm going to put a shirt on my back of somebody, I want somebody I can relate to, somebody I enjoy, somebody I'm proud to wear that shirt on my back. And certainly the other part of that is they got to do work on that racetrack. They've got to get behind the wheel and be a winner and be good at that side of it too.
Here with Clint Bowyer, and Clint, you guys at Stuart Haas have had a lot of success this year. How special has that been to be a part of it? We know Kevin's won a ton of races, but you've had your wins. Kurt's won. Eric has been very competitive. Just the organization overall, how special has that been?
I think that's where you truly show your you know, performance, how stout you really are as a group. You know, when I first came last year, we only had one car that was really consistently, you know, racing for wins and contending for wins. This year, all four of us are. That shows the strength in numbers. That shows the strength in the army behind those four cars. The engineering, the manufacturer, Yates and all the guys in the engine shop, the total package is there now, and it's showcased each and every week with all four cars.
Richmond this weekend, a place that you've had success at, and with the craziness that happened at Las Vegas, what do you expect on a short track Saturday night where it's probably going to be hot and there could be some tempers?
You expect that. You expect the unexpected, especially after we saw how wild our first race was. I think that just shows the intensity of the playoff format, the intensity of just three races within those playoffs, you know, before a cutoff. I think that just the pressure cooker turns way up, and I think that was showcased right there, right off the bat, the first race of the playoffs. Now, it's not that your back's up against the wall, but now that you've seen what can happen, we can't afford to have another weekend like that. We've got to go and take care of business at Richmond, and the old girl's been good to me a lot of times. I love that place, one of my favorite racetracks. You know, at the end of the day, everything should be fine. We go there, we run well, we led laps, you know. I don't know if we won the stage in the first race. We were close, but we run up front and took care of business, and you know, should be able to do that again. But all hell broke loose at Las Vegas for us. Jimmy Johnson, seven-time champion of all people, blows a tire and runs you over, smokes you in the fence. I mean, that stuff just doesn't happen very often.
Yeah, well, the sleeping giant wasn't awoken, as you said, last week.
But I damn sure don't want to wake him up either. I mean, he is the giant, and that's credit. You got to give credit where credit's due, and a seven-time champion's always going to be that capable guy and a dangerous guy inside of a playoff format.
Clint, as I let you go, I had your teammate Kurt Busch on last week, and we talked about the whole silly season thing and just how tough that is on a driver. You've been through it before. Every driver goes through it as a, you know, in their career. How difficult is it, though, to focus what's going on the track but also taking care of business off the track?
I think it's, you know, when I have been a part of that, it's nerve-wracking times. You know, it's always nerve-wracking when you don't know your future. Doesn't matter how good your present day is, if you don't know what your future is in our world, it is nerve-wracking, particularly nerve-wracking if you're not dominating your present day. You know, if you're winning races and take care of business, you'll always typically be fine. The way our world is now, where you see kids getting rides if they've got, you know, stack of money behind them or something like that, that's a dangerous predicament to be in, because at the end of the day, cash is king, and if you have a pile of it behind you, it doesn't matter who's in front of you, you got a good chance as any to take that ride, and that's the unfortunate part, the reality of the predicament, you know, that we're in right now. Is it's challenging times. That being said, one of my favorite things to do is relationships. You know, the relationship side of a partnership. It's not just a sponsor on the side of a car. Some people it is. Not to me. I mean, this Rush Truck Centers, it's like literally within 6 months was like family to me. You know what I mean? I mean, that five-hour relationship that I had for 5 years. Risa and everybody was family. I mean, that was a weekly call. You know, how are you doing? Not racing or anything else. How's the lake house doing? What are you doing there? You know, what are you doing if you're not coming this weekend? What's family? You know, a relationship, and that's the way it has to be. So, you know, I still enjoy that aspect of it, you know, every bit as much as being in that car behind the wheel racing.
Clint, I appreciate the time. Thanks.
Thanks, man.
Clint Bowyer is always the best. And as we wrap this up, he had a press conference before I had a chance to talk to him one-on-one. And I brought up the question of Nashville and whether NASCAR would come back here. And I actually asked him if he had ever raced at the fairgrounds.
Haven't. Obviously, a lot of new buzz, new hype, new talk about you know, our sport and maybe, you know, getting out and being a part of you know, getting in front of different eyeballs, right? And I could think of no better place on earth than to be right here in Nashville. Always loved the racetrack that we had here, you know, back in the Xfinity Series when I raced here. Won one of the all the trophies that I have, there's only one in my office that's right behind my desk, and that's the guitar from Nashville. That Gibson guitar, it was just something unique. You know, all of our trophies kind of look the same. When they hand you a Gibson guitar, it's pretty unique. So I've had a guy make a case for it, and it's right there, you know, right behind my desk in my office. But the fairgrounds, yeah. You know, short track racing is a premium in our sport. It doesn't matter where it is, you know, Martinsville, Bristol, the short tracks are, you know, that's where my background is. That's where I grew up. You didn't have a Talladega Super Speedway, you know, and Emporia, Kansas to go and cut your teeth on. It was short tracks across the country. So I think this market would be something that would be exciting to come to and see that old fairgrounds, you know, relive a couple cars on it.
That is going to do it for this week's edition of Chasing Checkers, ESPN 102.5 The Game. My thanks to Adam Alexander and Clint Bowyer. Enjoy the racing from Richmond, and we will talk to you next week right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game and thegamenashville.com.